Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, October 20th, 2023. The race for U.S. House Speaker is again wide open after no candidate gets a majority to be elected in another House floor vote today, with 25 Republicans voting for someone other than the Republican conference nominee Jim Jordan. Then House Republicans meet behind closed doors and vote to declare that Jim Jordan is no longer their nominee for Speaker. Republican members will be returning Monday to start looking for a new candidate. There has been no permanent House Speaker for 17 days. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that Hamas has released two U.S. hostages it's been holding since Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel, and the diplomatic work continues to find 10 Americans still unaccounted for. President Joe Biden sending to Congress a $100 billion emergency national security request that includes $14 billion for Israel, $60 billion for Ukraine. He outlined this in Thursday night's primetime speech from the White House Oval Office. Some Democratic members of Congress hold a rally on Capitol Hill calling for an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. And the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres visits the border crossing between Gaza and Egypt, saying that trucks loaded with humanitarian aid must be allowed to cross now. And we start with the U.S. House Speaker election. This from the Washington Post. House Republicans meeting behind closed doors voted Friday by secret ballot for Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, to step aside as the GOP Speaker nominee after a third vote on the House floor in which Jordan fell well short of majority of the full chamber. The vote to remove Jordan was 112-86. The move leaves the Republican conference without a nominee more than 2 weeks after the ouster of Congressman Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, as Speaker. House Republicans will return Monday to start the process again. Members have until Sunday to declare Speaker candidacies. That was from the Washington Post. Here's Congressman Jordan's reaction to all the developments.
Well, it was, I told the conference, it was an honor to be there. Speaker designee, but I felt it was important that we all know, get an answer to the question if they wanted me to continue in that role. And so we put the question to them. They made a different decision. I told the conference that I appreciated getting to work with everyone, talk with everyone. I got to know members in our conference that I didn't really know that well over the last 3 weeks, and that we need to come together and figure out who our speaker is going to be. I'm going to work as hard as I can to help that individual so that we can go help the American people. And I'm also going to go back to work. We got several depositions lined up next week in the Judiciary Committee, work that we need to do for the American people in our investigative work. So we'll go back to work there. But it's important we do unite. Let's figure out who that individual is, get behind him, and get to work for the American people. Thank you all very much.
Congressman Jim Jordan, Republican from Ohio, still chair of the Judiciary Committee, and after today's closed-door vote of secret ballot vote of the House Republicans, no longer the speaker designee from the party. CNN's Melanie Zanona posting confirmed people running for speaker: Tom Emmer, Majority Whip; Kevin Hearn, Republican Study Committee Chair; Byron Donalds, Freedom Caucus member; Mike Johnson, Vice Conference Chair and Judiciary Committee member; Jack Bergman, a former general; and Austin Scott, who challenged Jim Jordan last time. And also this from the Texas Tribune: Congressman Pete Sessions announced Friday afternoon he is running for U.S. House Speaker. Congressman Jordan started the day by saying he planned to hold a vote for Speaker today and potentially continue holding votes through the weekend until a Speaker is elected. The House met at 10 a.m. Eastern and called for nominations for Speaker. There were two. Congressman Kevin McCarthy, the former Speaker, nominated Jim Jordan. And Congresswoman Catherine Clark, the Democratic whip, nominated the minority leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries. Then there was the roll call of members alphabetically from the clerk, and members voting from their seats, rising and saying the name of who they're voting for. When that was all over, the Speaker pro tem, Patrick McHenry, Republican of North Carolina, read the results, including the votes he received. And again, no Speaker.
The tellers agree on their tally that the total number of votes cast is 429, of which the Honorable Jim Jordan of the state of Ohio has received 194. The Honorable Hakeem Jeffries of the state of New York has received 210. The Honorable Patrick McHenry of the state of North Carolina has received 6. All right, the House will come to order. The House will come to order. The Honorable Byron Donalds of the state of Florida has received 2. The Honorable Tom Emmer of the state of Minnesota has received 1. Lee Zeldin of the state of New York has received 4. The Honorable Steve Scalise of the state of Louisiana has received 8. The Honorable Mike Garcia of the state of California has received 1. The Honorable Kevin McCarthy of the state of California has received 2. The Honorable Bruce Westerman of the state of Arkansas has received 1. No person having received a majority of the whole number of votes cast by surname, a speaker has not been elected. Pursuant to Clause 12A of Rule 1, the chair declares the House in recess, subject to the call of the chair.
The Speaker Pro Tem, Patrick McHenry, presiding over the House, reading the results of the vote for Speaker today, the third one this week. Jim Jordan needed 214 votes today to be elected, a smaller number than the previous votes because there were some members not voting. Needed 214, he received 194. There were 25 House Republicans who voted for someone other than Jim Jordan. That's versus 20 in the first vote and 22 in the second vote. 3 new Republican flips today against Jim Jordan were Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, Tom Kaine of New Jersey, Mark Molinaro of New Jersey. That is, they voted for Jim Jordan previously and now voted for other people. Reporters asked Brian Fitzpatrick why he switched to vote for Patrick McHenry.
So you voted against him this round.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts moving forward? Could you ever switch back to Jordan?
Now, listen, this take the names out of it. This has never been about Hakeem Jeffries, Jim Jordan, Patrick McHenry. This is about opening our government. We have two wars raging. We have a government that runs out of money in 29 days. We have Ukraine running out of weapons in 2 weeks. We have 30 dead Americans in Gaza. We have 14 missing Americans in Gaza that we know of. And we have an entire branch of government that's offline. That is unacceptable. So I hope you all are asking the question of the 8 and the 208 that put us in this position, because they are the reason we're here. We're going to try to figure out how to clean up that mess that they caused. But that's why we're here right now. And everybody needs to be abundantly clear that we had a speaker who put a two-party bill on the floor to avert a government shutdown, and he was punished for it. That is the worst message you can send to America, the worst. And every single person that voted to punish bipartisanship ought to be held accountable.
Should Jordan
Everyone.
Drop out?
That's his choice. You saw how I voted today.
If not McHenry, is there anybody else you could see getting to 217?
That's a question for individual members. I think Patrick McHenry is a perfect person to just get us through the year and possibly the cycle.
At what point do you pick up the phone and call Hakeem Jeffries and ask him who?
I talk to Hakeem all the time. I respect him. I hope he's more bipartisan in the future, but I respect the man. I do. But we talk to our colleagues all the time. Okay? Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, Republican from Pennsylvania, speaking to reporters after today's House floor vote on a speaker and Jim Jordan not getting a majority of the full House to be elected. And a note, they were playing some of what happened throughout the day, but later in the day, the House Republicans voted in closed session to remove Jim Jordan as their speaker nominee. They'll look for a new speaker nominee come Monday. After today's floor vote on the steps of the U.S. Capitol, a few of those 8 Republicans who had voted with Democrats over 2 weeks ago to remove former Speaker Kevin McCarthy spoke to reporters and made an offer to the holdouts, the ones who are no longer, that were not voting for Jim Jordan and preventing him from becoming speaker. Here are Matt Gaetz of Florida and Bob Good of Virginia.
The 8 of us who voted to remove Kevin McCarthy have just sent a letter to our colleagues, really encouraging them to vote for Jim Jordan for speaker. And it seems as though the 20 or so holdouts against Jim Jordan have no goals, have no asks, have no objectives other than to see the 8 of us suffer some consequence for having removed McCarthy. So we've made them an offer. The 8 of us have said that we are willing to accept censure, sanction, suspension, removal from the Republican conference. We, of course, will remain Republicans. We will continue to vote with Republicans on Republican principles. But if what these holdouts need is a pound of our flesh, we're willing to give it to them in order to see them elect Jim Jordan for speaker.
The world's on fire, and some of your colleagues do blame you for this disruption.
Well, I would say that we've got a speaker designate. We could elect him. We could have a speaker right now. And, you know, I think the world was on fire when America sat atop a $33 trillion debt with no plan to reduce spending. I think the world was on fire as we watched the dollar just continue to slip away in its status as the global reserve currency. So maybe when the lobbyists and the special interests don't have total control of a Speaker of the House, they think the world is on fire and in chaos. But we actually believe this is governing, this is legislating, this is working through our differences. We believe Jim Jordan is an inspirational Republican candidate for House Speaker. And for those who are holding out, we would simply ask, you know, what do you want other than for us to suffer some consequence, which we stand ready to endure?
For 9.5 months, the Republican Party failed the American people. We delivered no wins for the American people in the first 9.5 months. The two opportunities we had to force positive change for the American people with the Democrat Senate and Democrat White House was the debt ceiling and the continuing resolution, both of which we did what Democrats overwhelmingly wanted us to do. Jim Jordan represents a chance to put a fighter and a leader at the top of the Republican conference that will actually work for the American people instead of the special interests.
Congressman, those you're talking about, you say that they just want to punish you. But when I talk to them, they say that they have real problems with Jim Jordan, that they see strong arm tactics, they see the way he's treated Steve Scalise, they don't trust him. They're saying the same things you said about Kevin McCarthy. How do you not respect that kind of point of view?
Well, we know Jim Jordan. I've worked with Jim Jordan on the House Judiciary Committee. He's not a person who leads through strong arm tactics. I think that Jim Jordan is being unfairly blamed by some for the tactics of outside groups that Jim Jordan has no control over. You know, we want to meet with our colleagues. We want to understand how they can get to a comfort level with Jim Jordan. You know, in January, allowed the ascent of Kevin McCarthy to the speakership. We had specific goals when, you know, those promises were made to meet those goals. We were willing to work with the team. So our call is to our fellow Republicans to vote with the team, work with the team, help us elect a Republican speaker.
Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida and Bob Good of Virginia, both Republicans, on the steps of the U.S. Capitol after today's House floor vote in which Jim Jordan, Republican, did not get a majority of the House in order to be elected Speaker. 25 Republicans voting for other candidates. Later in the day, House Republicans met and voted by secret ballot to say they do not want Jim Jordan to be their Speaker nominee anymore. They will choose someone else next week. Ken Buck, Republican of Colorado, also voted to remove former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. He told reporters today he did not sign the letter that Matt Gaetz and Bob Good were talking about, telling reporters he doesn't support Jim Jordan for Speaker. Congressman Carlos Jimenez, Republican of Florida, voted today on the House floor for former Speaker McCarthy to again be Speaker, and he spoke to reporters about why.
You flipped and voted for McCarthy. Is there a world in which... No, not for Jordan, but is there a world in which Jordan ever gets the votes? And is it time for him to
I don't think
out?
That Jim Jordan, it was pretty clear yesterday when he met with a number of us that he asked us what we wanted. We don't want anything. This is not something that we want. We don't want a committee. We don't want anything. So it's difficult for him to say, hey, what can I do to please you? I think the 22 are really solid. We got and picked up another three. I think more people are going to come around and say that, you know, you've had your chance. Let's go. Let's move on. It's time to move on. Look, keeping this up only divides the party. We're getting, you know, people calling and calling certain people rhinos and all that. Look, I've been a Republican all my life. I'm a solid Republican. And somebody to call me a Republican in name only is insulting to me. And there seems to be this pressure campaign. And if you put pressure on me, it's not going to move me, because if I somehow succumb to pressure, it means I'm going to be pressured all my life. I'll never be pressured. Anybody who knows me, and people from Miami know me, if you pressure me, no. If you talk to me, if you want to, you know, let's talk about it and all that, my mind could be persuaded. But at this point, I don't see him gaining any votes. I see him losing more and more votes. I think he ought to come to that realization. There is somebody in that conference that we can unite behind. And look, I've been with McCarthy, but I'm not saying McCarthy's going to be the final answer to us. But there's somebody there. And I'm sure that at the end, I'm going to be voting for the Speaker of the House of Representatives. His name may not be McCarthy, but it probably won't be Jordan, and it probably won't be Scalise, and it probably may not even be McCarthy. But we can find somebody.
When you met with Mr. Jordan and his surrogates, did they answer your concerns about threats? Did they make clear they're going to try to tamp that down?
He said, no, I don't think he did. I think mostly what he said, look, I had nothing to do with it. But yet today we're getting, you know, more of these text things about, you know, rhinos are stopping Jim Jordan, you know, click here, you know, all that stuff. And that's not what a leader does. And also, look, true leaders are followed. I have to follow you because, you know, you're my leader. I don't have to be pushed into you to be a leader. And so you're pushing me, you know, to follow you. That's not a true leader. And so I've known that for a long, long time. And if somebody tries to push me in a certain direction, look, I'll get there by myself. Don't try to push me. And if you try to push me, I'll probably push against you. So that's what we're feeling. Some people are getting threats. Some people are getting threats against their children.
You're getting threats too?
I'm not. I'm saying some people, not me, okay? Some people are getting threats, you know, against their wives and children and all that. It's being very offensive. And so, no, I'm not going to be there.
Is there a world in which you will ever vote for Jordan? You said if you were asked or if you were persuaded.
I will not vote for Jim Jordan. It used to be that I was voting for McCarthy. Now I'm not voting for Jim Jordan.
The people who originally voted against to oust McCarthy are now saying that they'll do whatever you all need to do, if that's retribution, facing consequences, getting kicked out of conference. If that helps you all vote for Jim Jordan, they're willing to do that. What do you make of that?
That will make me never vote for Jim Jordan. Why? Because if this was their plot all along to oust Kevin McCarthy, who was a rightful leader, to put the one that they wanted, that's just rewarding bad behavior. And so we'll see more of that. So if that's what they did, they just solidified my vote against Jim Jordan, because that was their intent all along.
Do you think retribution needs to be made at all against them, or what is your?
They followed the rules. I have never asked for any retribution. They followed the rules. They used the rules. But now they're saying, "Hey, we're willing to, you know, fall on our sword if you make Jim Jordan the speaker." That kind of shows to me that this was their plan all along. You can't reward bad behavior.
Congressman Carlos Jimenez, Republican from Florida, with reporters. Between the time that Jim Jordan lost a vote on the House floor, the third this week, to become Speaker, and later in the day, House Republicans voting by secret ballot to say they no longer want Jim Jordan to be their Speaker designate, and in fact, he has dropped out of the race. Next week, Republicans will be meeting to decide who to put forward as a new Speaker candidate. Also, speaking in that time between the House floor vote and where Republicans met privately, the House Democratic leader, Hakeem Jeffries.
Good afternoon. Welcome to month 10 of the House Republican majority's chaos, dysfunction, and extremism. Let me begin by thanking President Biden for demonstrating what leadership looks like here in America and for the free world. President Biden has made clear that there is serious business that needs to be done for the American people. But in order for that to happen, we need the House of Representatives to reopen so we can meet the needs of the American people domestically and in terms of our national security interests, so that we can stand by Israel in its time of need, stand by Ukraine in its time of need, stand by our allies throughout the world, provide humanitarian assistance to civilians in Gaza who may be in harm's way, and reach a spending agreement so we can keep the government open, avoid a shutdown, and continue to solve problems on behalf of everyday Americans. House Democrats continue to make clear that we are willing to find a bipartisan path forward so we can reopen the House and solve problems for hard-working American taxpayers. It's time for traditional Republicans to get off the sidelines, get in the arena, realize that the chaos, dysfunction, and extremism has to end. And the only way to do it is to figure out how we can partner in a bipartisan fashion to reopen the House and govern in a reasonable, common sense way. It's time for House Republicans to embrace bipartisanship and abandon extremism once and for all. That is your only way out of the House Republican chaos and dysfunction. Embrace bipartisanship and abandon extremism.
The House Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from New York, at a news conference after today's House floor vote yielded no speaker elected. And then, as Politico writes, in a shocking turn, Jim Jordan on Friday lost an internal Republican vote that was intended to show confidence in him remaining as his party's speaker designee. The Ohio Republican is now no longer his party's pick to lead the House, a demise sealed by a GOP secret ballot just after his third failed floor vote as a speaker hopeful. The article goes on, it was an unexpectedly fast end to the Ohio Conservatives' candidacy to lead the chaos-ridden Republican conference, and a sign that the flailing party is fed up on its 17th day without a speaker. Lawmakers now plan to leave Washington for the weekend as the next round of ambitious Republicans decides whether to mount their own speaker bids. But most Republicans acknowledge that even with new faces to consider, they still have no clear path to uniting their splintered conference. They've already rejected two speaker candidates, Jim Jordan and House Majority Leader Steve Scalise, as well as former Speaker Kevin McCarthy during this month alone. That was from Politico. Well, former Speaker McCarthy, now Congressman McCarthy, Republican from California, spoke to reporters about what happens next.
Unfortunately, Jim is no longer going to be the nominee. We'll have to go back to the drawing board. What history will look at, the crazy eights led by Gates, the amount of damage they have done to this party and to this country is insurmountable. I've never seen this amount of damage done to just a few people for their own personalities, for their own fear of what's going through. And really, it's astonishing to me, and we are in a very bad position as a party, one that has won the majority, one that America has entrusted us with, that a simple eight people have put us in this place.
So what's going to happen next? What kind of names do you expect to be on the candidate forum list?
I don't know. I mean, on a very serious note, this is talking about the person third in line to the presidency. And the furthest step anybody takes is from the front row to the podium. A lot of people here that might put their name in might not have the knowledge of what it takes in others. So I hope we had some other people up for the job. They both could have done the job. I'm concerned about where we go from here.
Will you get back in?
Congressman Kevin McCarthy, former speaker, with reporters also coming out to talk to the reporters. The Speaker pro tem, Patrick McHenry, Republican from North Carolina.
House Republicans will return on Monday at 6:30 p.m. for a candidate forum, followed by an election process on Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. The reason why I made that decision is we need space and time for candidates to talk to other members. It's fair to say that Leader Scalise wasn't given adequate time. He had 24 hours to campaign. I don't think that was right for him. Our nominee, Jordan, was given a little more time. Not right for him. The conference made a decision that we're going to move forward with a new speaker nominee today. But the space and time for a reset is, I think, an important thing for House Republicans. Now, on the national security front, we have fully constituted committees. Committees can still work, and they are working. Chairman Rogers, Chairman Turner, Chairman McCall, Chairwoman Granger are all working. I want to thank the administration for their briefings on the supplemental request for national security. Our committees are working with the administration, and the goal there for our committees is to be ready to respond legislatively once we have a duly elected Speaker of the House. And it's my goal to be talking to you at this time next Friday as chairman of the Financial Services Committee. Hope you all have a great
weekend. Are you doing a floor vote on Tuesday? Is that your plan?
That will be the goal.
Speaker pro tem, Patrick McHenry, Republican from North Carolina. Also, as he mentioned, he is chair of the Financial Services Committee. That's a position he'd like to return to. House has adjourned for the weekend. More coverage of the speaker's race next week on C-SPAN. CNN reporting this afternoon that Kenneth Chesbro, an attorney who helped orchestrate the Trump campaign's 2020 fake electors plot, pleaded guilty Friday in the Georgia election subversion case to being part of a conspiracy alongside former President Donald Trump and others. The plea deal is another blow to Trump and a major victory for Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, who charged Trump and 18 others in the effort to overturn the 2020 presidential election. It comes one day after former Trump campaign lawyer Sidney Powell also pleaded guilty and agreed to cooperate with prosecutors. Chesbro pleaded guilty to one felony, conspiracy to commit filing false documents. Fulton County prosecutors recommended that he serve 5 years of probation and pay a $5,000 fine in restitution. Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee imposed that sentence at Friday's hearing. That was from CNN. Wall Street today, the Dow down 286, NASDAQ down 202, S&P down 53. Washington Today continues in a moment. Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast on the C-SPAN Now mobile app and wherever you find your podcasts. Reuters reporting from Gaza, Hamas's armed wing has released two U.S. hostages from Gaza, a mother and her daughter, for humanitarian reasons in response to Qatari mediation efforts in the war with Israel, its spokesman said on Friday. Hamas says it took about 200 hostages during a deadly October 7th rampage carried out from the Gaza Strip on communities and military bases in southern Israel, part of the biggest attack on the country since the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. Hamas said 50 more are held by other armed groups in the enclave. It said more than 20 hostages have been killed by Israeli airstrikes, but has not given any further details. That was from Reuters. Secretary of State Antony Blinken gave more details at today's State Department news conference.
About an hour ago, two American citizens held by Hamas since October 7th were released. These two Americans are now safely in the hands of Israeli authorities in Israel. We expect a team from the U.S. Embassy to see them very shortly. Over the coming hours, they'll receive any support and assistance that they need. And, of course, we're very anxious to be able to reunite them with their loved ones. We welcome their release. We share in the relief that their families, friends, and loved ones are feeling. But there are still 10 additional Americans who remain unaccounted for in this conflict. We know that some of them are being held hostage by Hamas, along with an estimated 200 other hostages held in Gaza. They include men, women, young boys, young girls, elderly people from many nations. Every single one of them should be released. Since the earliest hours of this crisis, the President has made clear that he will do everything possible to secure the release of every hostage. During my own recent travel to the region, I emphasized the urgency and importance of this to the United States and pressed our partners to do everything they can to help us secure the release. Since that time, we continue to work relentlessly with partners to do just that. I can't speak publicly about the details of these efforts. I know you understand that. But the urgent work to free every single American, to free all other hostages, continues, as does our work to secure the safe passage out of Gaza for the Americans who are trapped there. In this particular instance, I want to thank the government of Qatar for their very important assistance. When I was in Israel last week, I met with the families of U.S. citizens that Hamas has taken hostage. President Biden, too, had the opportunity to hear directly from the families. It's impossible to adequately put into words the agony they're feeling of not knowing the fate of their loved ones, worrying relentlessly about them, for their safety, for their security, for their well-being. No family anywhere should have to experience this torture. What I shared with the families, as the President did as well, is that the entire United States government will work every minute of every day to secure their release, to bring their loved ones home.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken today at the State Department. More from the Reuters article. Israel responded to the hostage crisis and the attack by Hamas gunmen, which killed 1,400 Israelis, by pounding Gaza with airstrikes, killing more than 4,000 people, and has said it will act to free the hostages while wiping out Hamas. It amassed tanks and troops near the perimeter of the enclave for an expected ground offensive, calling on Palestinians to evacuate the north of Gaza, where it says Hamas is dug in. Israel has also said there will be no end to its full blockade of the enclave unless Israeli hostages are freed. That from Reuters. This from the Times of Israel. U.S. President Joe Biden urgently requested Friday military aid for Ukraine and Israel in a massive $106 billion national security package, but Republican paralysis in Congress means it will hit an immediate wall. President Biden's demand came a day after he drew a direct link between the Hamas attack on Israel and Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine to convince Americans that the United States must show global leadership. President Biden gave a national address from the White House Oval Office Thursday night.
American values are what make us a partner that other nations want to work with. To put all that at risk, if we walk away from Ukraine, if we turn our backs on Israel, it's just not worth it. That's why tomorrow I'm going to send to Congress an urgent budget request to fund America's national security needs, to support our critical partners, including Israel and Ukraine. Is a smart investment that's going to pay dividends for American security for generations. Help us keep American troops out of harm's way. Help us build a world that is safer, more peaceful, more prosperous for our children and grandchildren. In Israel, we must make sure that they have what they need to protect their people today and always. The security package I'm sending to Congress and asking Congress to do is an unprecedented commitment to Israel's security that will sharpen Israel's qualitative military edge, which we've committed to, the qualitative military edge. We're going to make sure Iron Dome continues to guard the skies over Israel. We're going to make sure other hostile actors in the region know that Israel is stronger than ever and prevent this conflict from spreading. Look, at the same time, President Netanyahu and I discussed again yesterday the critical need for Israel to operate by the laws of war. That means protecting civilians in combat as best as they can. And the people of Gaza urgently need food, water, and medicine.
Part of President Biden's primetime speech from the White House Oval Office Thursday night. When he posted it on X, formerly Twitter, he wrote, "The terror and tyranny of Hamas and Putin represent different threats, but they both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy." He said, "Let me share with you why this is vital for America's national security," and he included the video. Senator J.D. Vance, Republican from Ohio, was interviewed on Fox News after the president's speech Thursday and says the two aid requests should be voted on separately.
Why is Joe Biden going on national television and selling people on a Ukrainian escalation when Joe Biden is talking about the terrible tragedy in Israel? Whatever your views, Sean, on Ukraine, it is a separate country and a separate problem. I think what the president did is completely disgraceful. If he wants to sell the American people on $60 billion more to Ukraine, he shouldn't use dead Israeli children to do it. It was disgusting.
Senator J.D. Vance, Republican from Ohio on Fox News Channel Thursday night. The president's 100-plus emergency national security funding package sent to Congress today includes $60 billion for Ukraine, $14 billion for Israel, $14 billion for the U.S. southern border, $2 billion for the Indo-Pacific, that is Taiwan, and $10 billion for humanitarian aid for Israel, Gaza, Ukraine, and the U.S. southern border. A story at CommonDreams.com begins, citing the catastrophic suffering inflicted upon the people of Gaza by Israel's relentless bombardment of the Palestinian territory. Hundreds of Muslim and Jewish U.S. congressional staffers on Thursday signed an open letter urging lawmakers to demand a ceasefire as the war approaches the two-week mark. Today on Capitol Hill, there was a rally to call for a ceasefire, and one of the speakers, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, a Democrat from Minnesota.
I'm also saddened by the fact that 535 members of Congress could come together in one breath, fully condemn the horrors of what Israelis experienced. And that there is now only maybe few handful of them who could get to the point of saying, we condemn the slaughter of Palestinian children, of mothers, of fathers, of grandmothers, of grandfathers. Where is your humanity? How do you look at one atrocity and say this is wrong? But you watch as bodies pile up, as neighborhoods are leveled. Israel has dropped more bombs in the last 10 days than we dropped in a whole year in Afghanistan. Where is your humanity? Where is your outrage? Where is your care for people? How is it that we have a president who is talking about releasing hostages, who is talking about getting American citizens out of Israel, but could not get himself to say, I want to save and work to save the hundreds, thousands of Americans stuck in Gaza? What is wrong with you? How is this possible?
Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Democrat from Minnesota, one of several Democrats from the U.S. House at a rally today on Capitol Hill calling for a ceasefire in the Israeli-Hamas war. Reporters covering President Biden at the White House asked him about a promise of aid to Gaza. Trucks have lined up on the Egyptian side of the Rafah border crossing. The question to the president was at the end of a White House meeting he had with the leaders of the European Union and European Commission, discussing not only the Middle East, but Russia's war with Ukraine.
I'll answer that one question and then say goodbye. I believe you'll see that I got a commitment from the Israelis and the president of Egypt that the crossing would be open. The highway had to be repaved because it was very, very bad shape. And I believe that within the next 24 to 48 hours, the first 20 trucks will come across with aid. Thank you.
Thank you.
President Biden today at the White House at the end of a meeting with the presidents of the European Union and European Commission. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres today visited the border crossing between Gaza and Egypt and called for aid to be delivered now.
On this side, we have seen so many trucks loaded with water, with fuel, with medicines, with food. Exactly the same thing that I needed on this side of the wall. So these trucks are not just trucks. They are a lifeline. They are the difference between life and death for so many people in Gaza. And to see them stuck here makes me be very clear. What we need is to make them move. To make them move to the other side of this wall. To make them move as quickly as possible and as many as possible. Now, recently, it was announced by Israel and by the United States that humanitarian aid would be allowed to enter Gaza. And I know that there is also an agreement between Egypt and Israel to make it possible. But these announcements were made with some conditions and some restrictions. And so we are now actively engaging with all the parties, actively engaging with Egypt, with Israel, with the U.S., in order to make sure that we are able to clarify those conditions, that we are able to limit those restrictions in order to have, as soon as possible, these trucks moving to where they are needed.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres in Egypt on the Sinai Peninsula at the Rafah border crossing with Gaza. 200 trucks lined up there. One of the conditions from Israel is to be able to inspect that aid before it enters Gaza. Back in the U.S., the second gentleman of the United States, Doug Emhoff, who is Jewish, has been speaking out since the start of the Hamas-Israel conflict. He's met with Jewish community leaders at the White House and yesterday with an American survivor of the Hamas attack on the music festival in Israel. Today, Doug Emhoff visited a Jewish day school in Washington, D.C.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
You really made my morning. I needed to hear that. I needed to hear a hopeful song, a song of peace and joy, and I could see the happiness in your faces and the clapping and the dancing. So I needed that. So thank you. How are you all doing?
Good.
Yeah, you know, this is the second time I've been here. I've actually made matzah here. So, yeah, I know. You weren't here last time. I think you were all too young to see it. So it's good to be back here. And I just want to say hi on behalf of my wife, the Vice President, Kamala. And it's her birthday today.
Oh!
I mean, if you give me a big happy birthday.
Happy birthday!
Okay, good. Now I can bring that back to her.
We're going to sing for her.
Well, can you?
I got it.
Oh, okay. So she'll see it. She's going to see this because I'll show it to her. A quick version.
Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to probably use this instead of a card.
Yeah.
I can just say, here, honey. So thank you. I know you're probably talking to your parents and your teachers and your siblings about what's going on. But just know that I have your back. And the president and the vice president have your back, too. And we're always going to be there for you, I promise. Thank you.
Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff today at the Milton Gottesman Jewish Day School of the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. At the White House, singer Gabby Moreno, born in Guatemala, living in Los Angeles, at a celebration of National Hispanic Heritage Month, which runs in the U.S. from September 15th to October 15th, from earlier this week. And speaking at that event, First Lady Jill Biden.
In 1914, in the doorway of a Laredo newspaper called El Progreso, Jovita Idar stared down a group of Texas Rangers who had come to destroy the newspaper's building and everything in it. Jovita was a Mexican-American journalist, suffragist, and outspoken champion for civil rights. Her writing boldly challenged injustice, and it had come to the attention of the governor, who sent rangers to silence her printing presses. But Jovita stood in the way. Earlier this year, she was honored by a new quarter celebrating her remarkable contributions to our society. But her whole story, the people she helps, the right she fought to protect, the school she opened, and the legacy she left cannot be told on a coin alone. And the many stories of Latinos cannot be told without telling the courage and conviction. They showcase the strength, the ingenuity, and optimism of our country and of our people. And that is why we need the National Museum of the American Latino on the National Mall. And as we celebrate and lift up these stories of power, of perseverance, of pride, as we recognize the Latino voices that helped build our country, those who led movements to change, who wrote our laws, and who penned our poetry, we also recognize that our American history is incomplete without the stories that will never make it into the history books. The teachers. Any teachers out here? Yes! The teachers who helped educate our students. The doctors and nurses who helped heal our families. The faith leaders who comfort us. The farm workers who put food on our tables. The mothers and fathers and grandparents, the mentors and friends, the communities who lift each other up, who help each other find their way.
First Lady Jill Biden on Wednesday in the White House Rose Garden at a National Hispanic Heritage Month celebration. Vice President Kamala Harris also speaking, and we've got the full video on our website at cspan.org. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Sign up for C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, word for word, and get the stories making headlines in Washington emailed to you every day. Subscribe at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night and weekend.